It's time for Mac Break Weekly. What a great show we've got today for you. Leander Connie joins us. He's just written a book all about Sir Johnny Ive, the design genius. Inside Johnny Ive's Mind, next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 377, recorded November 19th, 2013. Save the Sea Turtles. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak1113. And by LegalZoom.com. Go to LegalZoom.com for affordable legal solutions you can trust. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but you can get self-help services at your specific direction. Or speak to a legal plan attorney to get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to get $10 off at checkout. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers Apple and your Apple, all the Apple news, the Apple stories, the pads, the pods, the eyes, the ease. It's all here. With Mr. Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times. Good to see you, Andy.
You forgot about the beep boops. We talk about the beep boops, too.
The beeps, the boops, and the boops, and the beeps.
Exactly. Just, you know, things.
All
just
of that.
If its main role is to look pretty and to enhance your life 9 times out of 10 and make your life a little bit annoying 1 time of 10, that's technology. It's probably Apple, and that's what we're going to be.
He's also host of Iannocco's Almanac on 5x5.tv. And I heard you as I was coming in talking about your experience with the Nokia phones and the Nokia camera phones specifically.
Yeah, I mean, because Nokia sent me the new tablet and the new phablet today.
I want the 2520. And this is the Windows Weekly show on Macintosh Break, yeah, Macintosh Weekly. But
I was just saying that.
I want that.
Yeah, these 8.1, these Windows 8 tablets, they got some problems because they haven't really matured yet. But man, it's just like a beautiful object. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like now it's really got my head turned around. I was saying before the show that if Apple decided to do just like a 5C style iPad, that's right. Just we're gonna make it out of plastic, but it's gonna be a gorgeous and colorful and really, really joyous device. Boy, am I on board with that now.
It's kind of interesting because this is the only other company besides Microsoft that makes Surface RT tablets. Everybody else is abandoned. In fact, Microsoft themselves lost almost $1 billion last year on Surface RT.
Yeah, they took a $900 million write down.
Yeah,
I have to admit that I still don't really see. This isn't the Windows show, but it's like if there were a huge library of really good apps for it, I could see RT. But as it is, it's like, oh, that's kind of painful.
Maybe they're jump starting it anyway.
They'll do okay. They can coast through.
They can coast through. Also with us, of course, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
I'm taking an extra dose of Apple Kool-Aid so I don't run out and buy all the Nokia plastic things.
Ooh,
right now.
Apple Kool-Aid. So it's flavorful. It's delicious.
It's retina, but it's got a low-color gamut, so I'm enjoying it anyway.
Also here from the Cult of Mac, Leander Connie. Great to see you.
Hey, Leo. Thanks. I'll be taking a swig of the rye behind me later on.
Rye is probably more enjoyable. Leander has a new book out on Johnny Ive, and I really want to ask you about this. How much access to Johnny did you get?
Not a lot, I'm afraid. I was turned down.
He doesn't give interviews.
No,
we've tried for ages to get him on. And he's, I don't know if he's shy or smart.
Smart. Apple controls the messaging.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, he's very articulate. He's a great guy to talk to. I talked to him in the past. I've interviewed him for Wired. But unfortunately not for the book. It was declined.
Well, but you obviously talk to everybody around him.
Right. Yeah. Much more than anyone else has done, yeah.
Yeah, I cannot wait. Well, we'll talk about that, too, in a moment. So a great team. Good to have you all. And not to steal Nokia's thunder, but the same day that Nokia announced that 2520 tablet, Apple announced its iPads, the iPad Air. And You may remember last week at this time, Apple had stealth announced the iPad mini with Retina, and I spent half the show trying to get one. And I did get one, which just came today. But I was more interested in getting it before then so that we could review it on Before You Buy, or at least get a first look on Before You Buy and so forth. So I sent Glenn Rubenstein down, and he went and got it that day. And I don't know if you watched the Gizwiz, but we put a chicken out in the road, a stuffed one, to hold the parking space for Glenn as he and Josh Windisch came back from our office. And this is the Retina. So I've had it for a week now, and I love it.
Now, in like Bay Area Apple stores, what percentage of the customers there that day were actually like bloggers and tech reviewers who thought this is probably the I can either wait a day to, and maybe Apple will send me one, or I can get it right now.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, exactly. You know, I was the Mini fan. I grew to love my Mini an awful lot. Took it traveling and everything, but my one lament was the lack of a high resolution display, and I have to say. Even more than the high-res display, the speed is notable. Mm-hmm. The Retina had a low pretty was basically an iPad 2, right?
Yeah, A5 chipset, and A5 and A7 in there.
Yeah,
which is, like you said before, it's notebook class. It's ridiculously fast, and especially the comparison between the original Mini and this one is even more profound than the full-size iPad because that only went one processor generation, and this is a full two-generation jump.
Significant. So I'm thrilled. I mean, this thing is great in every respect. I didn't know this, but I have girl hands, so I have small hands. So I couldn't hold the Air in one hand, although everybody else here could. But I can hold this in one hand, and it just feels right to me.
Not only that, but I think it looks right. I don't have one yet, but I've spent a couple hours with one. And I like it so much more than the first one.
Yeah.
Not just because of the speed, but because of the higher density display and iOS 7. It looks so much less like a normal sized iPad that's been shrunk down and more like its own thing.
It feels like it's. Well, and also, you know, then they did. It's funny because it's still 4:3. And I do mm-hmm. believe that 4:3 is the right aspect ratio, at least for iPads.
Yeah.
Because of the smaller bezels, it almost feels like something between a 16:9 tablet like the Nexus 7 and a 4:3 tablet like the iPad.
Feels like a Samsung phone.
It's kind of...
you take that back.
A big Samsung. So, I'm really... I cannot find a negative on this one. I think there have been... So, I can't believe this. Every time. So there have been some complaints of screen retention.
It's the same panel thing as a Retina MacBook Pro, Leo. Exact same issue. Right. It's a small percentage of people. You can exchange it. It is a Retina display. It's higher density than the iPad. It's 326, the same as the iPhone 5.
Yeah.
But they kept the same color gamut as the original iPad Mini, which means that it's not as wide as the iPad Air. So reds, for example, aren't as saturated. And that has caused an incredible amount of angry emotions on the internet.
How dare they? They did two things that are different. So this is we weren't sure. Is it a shrunk down iPad Air? An iPad Air just a different size, but in fact it's 100 megahertz slower.
Yes.
iPhone 5S slow. How slow is that really? And it's I didn't know the color gamut was. Is that that must have to do with the part, right?
Oh my God, Chad's hair will look slightly less red.
OMG.
On an Air. Yes.
Well, yes. That sucks.
It's the same as the iPad Mini. All Apple did was go to Retina. They didn't change the actual panel itself. And this has upset some people, upset photographers, other people, most people, the vast majority of people will never know the difference. They won't even know what there is a difference unless they put both sides.
You just told me. I didn't know.
The human brain autocorrects so many things that unless it has a comparative frame of reference, it just doesn't notice these things.
This red looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, that's why I think that some of the reviews that I and other people do, I think we have to sort of differentiate the stuff that we can sense by the virtue of the fact that we have access to other devices and stuff that people are that consumers are really going to notice. I still have the Kindle Fire HDX 8.9, and if you put them side by side, that display is visibly better than the iPads. But God, if you've got to complain about the quality of this screen, either you you were born somewhere on Krypton, and I'm hoping that you're in the good costume and not the Zod costume, or you're just looking for reasons to say, ah, but I was able to just tell the difference between these two. It is a magnificent display all the way.
Yeah. I've certainly not been unhappy. In fact, until you said that, I was happy. Damn you!
This was just our ploy to try to get you to like. It's a piece of crap. Why don't you just send it to me and I'll.
I got
a brother with an auto wrecking yard. We'll send you a video of something being crushed, and you can.
Oh, you know, my test for all things iPad is how Simpsons Tapped Out looks on it, and it looks fabulous.
You can still lose hundreds of dollars very quickly.
Yes, Homer has never been more fine grained.
You notice the 100 megahertz difference, Leo? Because I don't. Some people complain about it. I don't notice anything.
People complain about that?
It's sluggish, Leo. It is sluggish.
Oh, you such a silly, silly boys you are. No. And I have an Air.
Yep.
Yeah, I have an Air. So how about you, Leander? Have you been playing with either the Air or the Mini?
Yeah, I got an Air. I didn't get a Mini. I wanted the bigger screen. I think, right. It's absolutely fantastic. It's really a beautiful device. It's very light. The one thing I liked about the old Mini was the battery life. The battery life was really good. And is the battery life good on the new one too? Is it as good as the old?
I don't know. It seems the same to me, but obviously I'm completely tone deaf. I have a tin ear. I can't see the dimmer red. I can't see the slower
speed.
Well,
my Mini, I didn't have to charge for a week.
Renee Ritchie, tell me once again, is this a crappy battery life? Because it seems all right to me.
We've gotten to a point now, and people asked me about the LTE. People have asked me about the battery life, that your use case now
so
has
different.
More impact on the battery life than anything that comes out of the factory.
Yeah. It's very hard now to quote a number, totally because everybody uses it differently. And I don't know if I buy. I mean, I guess, you know, you have to, if your publication, choose something. So, I don't know, Engadget or somebody says, well, we're just going to run video until it dies. Yeah, that's one thing, but it's not a normal use case.
Yeah. I think it's like a staircase, and the size of the stair steps have become a lot bigger over the past 2 years in terms of battery life. Where there, like 5 years ago, 7 years ago, the difference between a notebook that gets 3 hours versus 4 hours was huge. Now we're arguing over whether this tablet gets 8.5, another one gets 9.5 to 10. And unless you have been using your tablet for 9 hours, that's not terribly significant.
No.
So now to have a really big difference, you have to talk about 3 hours more, or even the difference between like a Paperwhite Kindle and a colored device that, you know, a battery that will last legitimately for weeks versus for a day or two.
Well, I'll vouch for the fact this does not last for weeks.
I've been working on my review still. It's not quite finished yet, but I was doing LTE tests, and I'm getting 96 or 97 down consistently on the iPad Mini on Rogers, and only 85 on the Air, and only 65 on the iPhone 5S.
You see?
And I was tearing my hair out. I was talking to all these different people. Is the carrier provisioning it different? Is there any difference? In the end, I realized I don't care. All these speeds are so fast that it makes absolutely no difference, and they're consistently fast. So I just check the box saying fast, and I move on.
Right. That's interesting. Is that that's on LTE
Rogers
from Rogers?
LTE Rogers, Rogers has got really. It's almost like lanes in a highway, and some places have only 3 lanes of LTE, and Rogers in some places has 20 lanes.
So that's really fast. It's probably very implementation specific. Yeah. This is a Wi-Fi one. I don't ever buy the LTE ones.
It's my hotspot, and it lasts for like a day as a hotspot. So I religiously get the LTE ones, and I use it all the time, because I don't like going, just for security reasons, I don't like going on hotspots like at coffee shops or anything. I'd much rather have my own network. So I just buy the LTE version and I use it. And that was interesting because I've been using it with the Haswell MacBook Air running Mavericks. And previously I could stay at the coffee shop until my battery ran out because I never wanted to carry a cord with me.
Right.
And now it doesn't run out. I have to get up and leave because they just go on.
12 hours in a coffee shop is too much.
I'm shutting down the coffee shops now.
So this is the I don't normally buy the Apple cases. It's kind of hard not to buy the smart cover, right? But it's so bad, especially on the Mini, because it doesn't have enough heft to hold the Mini up. So the Mini's floppy, and it doesn't protect the back. So this is the smart case, which I think is actually pretty good. It fits in very nicely. I got product red, so I felt good about myself ending the world's problems. But it still doesn't. I mean, it's a little bit more secure. At least the case, the cover doesn't fall off. But it's still a little floppy in the, you know. But it's okay. It's okay.
I, think, did they change the way that those covers fold? Because
yes.
the one I have on the Air, I can't
See?
Seem to, I think there's one fewer fold in it. Now it's yes. harder for me to figure out how to lock
the
it in.
The same. The Air is now like the Mini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Air is like the Mini. And then it's okay. This, you know, it's good. Well, see, it flopped again. It's good. This is, I said it's good. It flopped.
Until you touched it, Leo.
Until I touched it. So this is the old one. It had four equal, almost equal parts. One was slightly larger. This has three, and a small one at the top.
It was already a stable prism before it took on the task of supporting the iPad in the old design. This now it's like, okay, but don't. Yeah, type delicately, type gingerly.
Yeah, it's a little squishy. But, like, you know, the new product, there aren't a lot of case choices yet anyway. So, I mean, I'm happy. At least this protects it. And it looks awfully stylish in my hand. And I just love the size is good for just, like, carrying it.
And Apple is the only one allowed to put an Apple logo on the cases.
Oh, is that true?
Yep.
So that's good for people, purposes of stealing them. You know what you're getting.
Yep.
Yeah.
You want your Gucci on the bag, you've got to get an Apple.
I did not know that. I did not know that.
Of course.
That's why everyone else cuts the circle out so that you can see the Apple logo through it, because they can't put one on the case. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Number of people prefer the Poetic smart case. It's the same, basically same idea, but less wobble.
The nice thing about the Retina Mini, unlike the Air, is that the form factor is basically the same. It is a hundredth of an inch thicker, but it makes almost no difference. So most of your last generation
cases will still fit. Work with that. Boy, you're useful. You're good to have around. I'm going to forgive you the fact that you told me that my reds aren't red and my speed is slow and there's retention. It's retaining. Forgive you all of that.
I ran the test on mine. Mine is fine, 100% retention free, but I'm sure there are some panels by some manufacturers that are problematic.
We talked, was it a couple of weeks ago, we talked about why isn't there a HyperCard equivalent that it would be so good to have HyperCard on the iPad and so forth. There, somebody sent me a note saying there is a company in the United Kingdom is doing a Kickstarter for a new HyperCard. They call it Live Code, next generation Live Code. It would be open source. They wanted £350,000. They raised £493,795, more than enough. They made their stretch goals. So I'm finding this exciting.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Adam Angst, I was at the MacDev a couple of weeks ago, was using that exact same system to build like a game board for presentation. And the scripting is very much like HyperTalk, where you create objects and then you give them, you attach object scripts to each one of them. There are actually a couple of different like open source alternatives to HyperCard out there. I don't think any of them are quite like what we want for the iPad though, which is the ability to just
drag and
put objects together and script them.
Yeah. Well, it's being billed anyway as a HyperCard like environment. I guess there's a language called Open Language. For the more technical people, that would be the HyperTalk equivalent.
Yeah, but it's good stuff because there are so many times when people don't necessarily need to learn how to develop an iOS or a macOS program. They just need to build something that's interactive so that they can solve a problem that's right at hand. And a lot of times we're talking about courseware, we're talking about presentationware, we're talking about ways to just create a tool for a specific purpose that you can then dispose of when you're done with it, like a sheet of paper on a notepad. And that's why I really, really hope that we get to see something like this become a mainstream solution.
So it's supposed to be out soon, I guess. I mean, they said fall of 2013, so we'll watch with interest. But anyway, I got a lot of people saying, oh, no. These Scottish people have created it. There is a HyperCard. It's called Live Code. Aye. And you can
download it. That's a pretty big following on the desktop, isn't it?
Pardon me?
I think it has a big following.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Like a big user community. And I think someone told me about some kids that were making iOS apps using it.
That would be really cool. Yeah. Well, I'm going to download it and play with it and see. You can get it at livecode.com. Let's take a break. And then when we come back, I want all the dirt on Johnny Ive. There's got to be something wrong with that.
Well, mostly it's stubble. It's not dirt. It's a common misperception.
Leander Cani is here, and his new book is on audible.com. If you want to read it, see, every time I say read, people get upset with me. If you want to listen to it as if you were reading it, you can. Oh, did I spell Johnny wrong? I spelled J-O-N-N-Y-I-V-E. Maybe if I spell, Leander Cani, much easier. K-H-N-E-Y, right? I think. Yes, there it is. Johnny Ive, there's one N, that's why. Johnny Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest products. Simon Vance is one of their best narrators. Did you get to audition the narrators, Leander?
I was supposed to, and I forgot.
Well, they gave you their, you know, good news. So you can get this for free right now if you go to audible.com/MacBreak. Let's listen to a little bit of Simon Vance.
Mike Ive's influence reached well beyond the precocious child in his own household. For many years, he worked as a silversmith and teacher in Essex.
See, who knew that?
Described by one colleague as a gentle giant, he was well-liked and much admired.
Wait a minute, how big is Johnny Ive? Gentle giant?
That's his daddy's.
Oh, his father was a gentle giant. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's one too, though. He's a big guy.
Is he? Is he tall?
He's muscular, yeah. No, he's just big, you know, belly.
Really?
Like a tank.
I think of him as a slight, wimpy designer, not a...
Oh.
No, he's a muscly guy. He's muscly.
Oh, I'm sorry, Johnny. I apologize. So Audible is the world's greatest bookstore of audiobooks. We are major fans here at TWIT. They've been a sponsor for years. Every show, Andy and Akko and I compare notes on what we're reading. I was just telling Andy about this great new book I got called Dangerous Men that I'm really enjoying. All about the revolution in television that was fostered. Is that the name? Maybe I got the wrong name. Or I guess just Dangerous Men is such a popular name. About the revolution in television fostered started with The Sopranos. I'm going to go to my library and see what the actual name of this is here. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, Difficult Men, that's why. They're not dangerous, they're just difficult. Behind the scenes of a creative revolution from The Sopranos and The Wire to Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And man, I mean, like my four favorite shows, so how could I not buy this book? But here's the problem. I just gave you two books, and they're both nonfiction. Well, there's also great fiction. Ender's Game. It's the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. There are a lot of history books about that, as you might guess. You get to choose from some of the best. All audio means you can sit in the car and listen as you drive if you've got a long commute. This is a lifesaver. I listen at the gym, on the treadmill. There's nothing more boring than a treadmill unless you're listening to Heart of Darkness, narrated by Kenneth Branagh. Then the treadmill is not nearly long enough. So many great things here. So my strong suggestion is you visit audible.com. Take a look at Leander's new book. I think that would be a great choice. There's been some really good books about technology that have come out in the last 6 months. The Amazon book by Brad Stone, that's fascinating. Hatching Twitter, Nick Bilton's book about Twitter. Suddenly, this great technology journalism is back. Thank goodness. I love these behind-the-scenes books, and I cannot wait to read this. Johnny Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest products. And by the way, Leander doesn't mind if you get it for free. He still gets his royalty. Audible.com/. I say that because people go, well, I'm not going to get it for free. I want to support Leander. No. Audible pays the royalty on this. Leander Cani is the author, K-A-H-N-E-Y. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month. Your first month is free. Oh, look, Audible wants to chat with me. My personal concierge is here. Let's not chat right now. I'm in the middle of a show. Audible.com/MacBreak. Your first month is free. Your first book is free. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. You will pay nothing, but that book will be yours to keep forever. And the real challenge here, frankly, is with 150,000 titles, where do you begin? It's so great. I love it. You will too. Audible.com/MacBreak. So when did you decide to write a book about Johnny Ive, Leander?
It was about 18 months ago.
And why?
Because it was clear that he was stepping into Steve Jobs' shoes and that he was going to be the most important sort of creative force of the company after Jobs. And not much is known about him. I mean,
he's interesting to me.
Guy.
Yeah. I mean, we've tried to interview him for years and he just won't
give interviews. It almost feels like he's Apple's secret weapon. You know, you know the name. You know he designed everything from, you know, this iPad to the first. What was his first Apple product?
It was actually the second generation Newton pad.
What? He's been there since the Newton?
Yeah.
Can you get me my Newton 2000? I have a Newton 2000 message pad. That would be Johnny Ive's first thing, right?
Well, it was the 110, no. I think.
Oh, the 110.
Codename Lindy. So it was the second one. The first one they rushed out, and it was a bomb. And they knew it was a bomb. So they, when he joined the company, they had him redesign it. And he was redesigning the second one even before the first one was released. So they went out with the first one. Unfortunately, it, you know, it died. And by the time his second one came out, it was DOA on the gurney. But it was supposed to be a great design. I mean,
so we never saw his Newton design.
Yeah, it came out, but it never really went anywhere. You know, I mean, This is not it then.
This is a message pad. I don't know which one it is. This must be the first one because it looks a little.
They had one. I think they had the 2000 came out after that. So it was like the message pad, the 110, then the 2000, the 210.
So this is the 110, probably. This is the original.
That's the original.
Yeah, it was.
You know who knows? Our Windows expert, because he's an expert also in an antique Macintosh and Apple memorabilia. But so this is not a Johnny Ive design. Although I have to say, for its era, this is a really good design.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It got really good in the end. The Newton.
Yeah.
But it never really got traction.
So this was not under Steve Jobs. This was a Scully, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So it was John Scully who hired Johnny Ive.
Well, it was Robert Bruner, who was the head of the design studio at the time, and he's now, you know, had a he did the Beats headphones, Beats by Dr.
You're
Dre.
You're kidding?
No. But he was the head of the design department, and a lot of what Bob Bruner did sort of set the stage for Johnny's success.
Interesting.
And in fact, the job that Johnny designed a Newton tablet. That was it never saw the light of day, but that was the design that got him the job at Apple.
What are we looking at here? This is from the book. This is a video of the book.
I don't have to change myself to fit the product. It fits me.
Yeah.
But not with the experience of actually using it is how it feels in your hand. It is incredibly intuitive. I mean, you can use it.
It's so funny.
You know, it's just the way.
This is how we know Johnny Ive is in the white space.
It's truly the
best thing we've ever done.
Of hard work, I think, driven by this obsession.
This is a parody video for the book where he edited together.
He's talking about the book,
right?
Yeah.
The entire front is just dominated by this incredible image. You are just.
I bet Apple was a really good sport about this.
Yeah, they were. Image.
Were they?
There's not a detail there. It doesn't need to be there.
They got banned on YouTube.
Did it?
A day after it went up, yeah.
Oh, man.
Everything is about your content.
I mean,
we've considered the tiniest details.
You could see why, but it was. But I so totally appreciate
who
that.
Who did this? Who did this video, Lander? Yeah.
Externally. Yeah, I got a guy up in Canada to do it.
I think that testifies to just our care. I mean, just how much we care.
Up in the Yukon, where laws are just between man and nature.
In Canada, anything goes.
They don't have copyright laws up there, so
we have Sam Steele.
Right on,
you got
Canada.
You got a Julian Assange thing going for you now. You can't leave the embassy.
So was it the partnership with Steve Jobs that really put Johnny Ive on the map, or was he great before Steve came along?
Oh yeah, he was totally great, but the design department, you know, had no traction inside Apple. It was an engineering driven company, so they couldn't get any of their work to get traction. So they were battling the engineers the whole time. And then when Steve came in, he said, this is crazy. You know, we're going to do it my way, the designer way. We're going to, you know, design these things from the inside out.
So the break you got in writing the book was getting to meet a guy named Douglas Satzger, who worked with Johnny for a dozen years.
Right.
And so he was there before Jobs came back, and he was there through the iPad. So And this guy was pretty forthcoming.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was very frank. Yeah, he told me everything. I mean, this is one of those interviews when, you know, 5 minutes in, you're like, "What are you doing? Why are you telling me all this stuff?"
Does he still work at Apple?
No, he heads up Intel's design department.
There you go. Now you know why. Yeah. There's no repercussions.
Right.
So, what did he tell you?
Well, we started with Jobs' return, and we went through the iMac and all the string of hit products up to the iPod, and then the iPhone, the iPad, you know, how they did them, what the problems they had, how they worked, the design of the layout of the lab, you know, everything.
One of the things that Jobs celebrated, and actually it was one of the things that I kind of thought of as epitomizing Apple's. And I thought of his Jobs' point of view, but maybe this is a Johnny Ive story. I don't know. On the cheese grater iMac, the holes on the front are milled in such a way that when they – normally, if you had circular holes all the way up the front and then you bent it as they did at the top to make a curve, the holes that were on the bend would become elliptical. They'd be stretched out. Mm. They milled it in such a way – that when you bent it, the holes became circular, so they were circular all the way around. That is mind-boggling attention to detail.
Yeah.
And I thought of it as a really good metaphor for better or for worse, where the design focus was at Apple. Was that a Johnny Ive idea? Do you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about that machine was that they designed every single surface of that to that same aesthetic standard. Even the inside of the door.
Yeah.
Because they were so pleased with it. They were so delighted. They said, people aren't going to put this under the desk. They're going to put it on the desk.
No, they aren't.
If people put it on the desk, that means you can see the back, the sides, and even the inside. They
it's
even designed
under
the
my desk. But I did. When I first opened that Mac Pro, I was blown away. I've opened a million PCs. I've never seen one that looked like that. I mean, it was gorgeous inside.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, they designed the motherboard. They designed all the cables. They designed the chips to look good. They had the coloring of everything on the inside. Every single thing in that thing was designed. And that was the first time they went in and they actually designed the internals too. Because, and you remember, it came with a plastic, a see-through plastic front. So if you took the door off, you could see inside.
Yeah. Crazy.
But Foxconn, when they found out what they wanted to do, almost went crazy. That was what started their relationship with Foxconn.
Really?
Terry Gow was like, this is nuts. You're mad. No one does this. But they were trying to work with an American company at the time. The American company were like, they just couldn't come up with the goods. And then Terry Gow reorganized the whole company. He said, we're going to do this. You know, and he met the challenge. That's what started them working with Foxconn.
And Foxconn still makes almost all the Apple products, or at least the final assembly on almost all the Apple products.
Right. Well, people think, you know, that they went to Foxconn because of cheap Chinese labor. And I'm sure that didn't hurt, but it was mainly because they had a partner there that would bend over backwards to implement their designs.
Foxconn invented and built machines just to do the things that Johnny Ive wanted to do.
Oh, they did it over and over again, yeah.
They said, we can make that, and they had to invent it.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, they do it all the time. I mean, almost every product, all the unibody stuff. You know, has a lot to. They're spending almost $10 billion a year on machines just to make the unibody products.
Did you say a billion?
$10 billion.
Ten a year on the manufacture.
Yeah, since 2009.
Because we always talk about the fact that Intel's got to build $1.5 billion, maybe $2 billion chip fabs. Oh, what a huge investment they make to make these chips. $10 billion a year.
Uh-huh. And they've been doing it for multiple years.
Holy cow.
And they bought up the entire world's supply of CNC milling machines. These machines cost $1 to $3 million each. No one else could buy one for 3 years. Bought up the entire world's supply. I've had these engineers
take that, Samsung. No wonder their stuff's plastic.
Right, exactly.
Holy moly. So did Johnny Ive, I presume he did well off of all this. I mean, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, these guys getting rich and becoming flamboyant. And Johnny is so under the radar. I presume he's doing all right.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Okay, good.
He just bought a $17 million mansion in the swankiest part of San Francisco.
Oh, really? In Seacliff? Where?
It's Lower Pacific Heights, Billionaire Row.
Oh, yeah.
I don't actually hang out there. It's not-
I know where that is. Yeah, I actually have a friend who has a couple of houses up there. Wow.
A beautiful view of the bay.
Oh, it's gorgeous. That's where all the old mansions, all the old money goes, is up.
Right, exactly, yeah. But he lived very modestly for a long time up on Twin Peaks. Small two-bedroom house.
Really?
Yeah.
There's the mansion. Oh, how pretty. Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, it's not too shabby, as they say.
It looks like it could be in Oxford. it looks gothic. Wow. Can't get any bigger.
Oh, there we go. Replace with something made out of one huge block of milled aluminum.
Yeah. I mean, look at this. This is very, for a guy who hates skeuomorphism, this is pretty skeuomorphic.
That's authentic to the house, Leo.
Oh, of course. It's exactly what the house wants to be.
It's inevitable.
It does make you wonder, though. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I always get really, really curious when I hear about a really, really legendary artist or designer who buys an ambitious house, because if this is a guy who would not be satisfied with the fact that holes cut in a sheet of bent metal will change shape when they bend, how long will it take for him to redesign this house so that he's satisfied with everything inside?
Imagine
forever.
I was talking to a friend who does cabinet work, actually, a friend, who made some cabinets for a kitchen for something like this. They were $300,000 for the kitchen cabinets alone. And the reason is it was an older house, and they wanted the cabinets to be distressed so they looked old. And so the expense of distressing the cabinets with acid and chains and whips and whatever it is they use was $300,000.
That's what I do to my jeans, Leo.
Yeah, and I can just imagine what – you're exactly right, Andy. Every dot on that house. Now, that, by the way, is the house before he bought it.
Right.
That's the realty brochure. So who knows what it looks like now? Could be all milled aluminum.
He's spending a lot of time designing the new spaceship campus down in.
Is he involved in that?
Oh yeah, very much. Yeah. If you look at the videos on the Cupertino site, you see him in all the videos. And in fact, there's a rendering that just came out. Was unearthed this last week, and there's a picture of his Aston Martin parked out front.
Is that Johnny's Aston Martin?
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. He has an Aston Martin.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. You tell the story of it's a $250,000 Aston Martin, something like that. He totaled.
Yeah, he almost got killed crashing.
But he's replaced the DB9 with another one.
Yeah, he got replaced with another DB9, and that burst into flames in his driveway and almost burned his house down.
Good British engineering.
Never happens to James Bond.
That's Lucas, the Lord of Darkness.
He was experimenting with a new magnesium body frame that turned out to be a bad idea.
Actually, yeah, it's funny because those cars are all, you know, the construction is very much like the new iPads. They're all glued together.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Does he ever get taken to task for that? I mean, we've had iFixit on taking apart the iPad Air, and they gave it a repairability, one of the lowest, second lowest they've ever given of a 2 out of 10, and mostly because everything was glued together and there is just no recyclability at all possible. Does he get involved in that at all?
Oh yeah, totally. You know, but what they say is that the products are repaired expressly to be designed, but they're designed to be repaired by professional technicians at Apple. And
not you. You
know, this is one of the interesting things I talked to with Doug Satsky when he went down to Intel. Intel wants to get into consumer products, but he was like, "You've got to think this thing through because you know, at some point you're going to have to service these products. You know, how are you going to do that? Apple's got hundreds of stores all around the world." A huge service system already set up, and you can just walk in and hand over, you know, your iPad, and they'll fix it behind the scenes. And iFixit, you know, takes them to task because you can't fix it yourself,
right?
And they criticize these products because they're not, you can't fix them by amateurs, or you can't take it down to the guys at Best Buy and they'll fix it for you. But they're very carefully designed, and Apple builds a whole bunch of tools also for them to be repaired by professionals.
So they and know Apple what they're doing. Yeah.
I'm sorry, so that.
But the issue is also recycling because
Well, they're supposed to be 100% recyclable.
You can't demand professional recyclers.
Like, well, they're 100% recyclable, they say. You know, so the new MacBooks are supposed to be 100%
recyclable. In the hands of professionals. But real recyclers are going to go, I don't know what to do with this. I'll just put it in a grinder.
Well, who recycles their MacBook, you know? Well, I mean, you don't break it up and you put some in the compost and then, you know, some.
You can send it to Apple for recycling, right?
So yeah, you can.
Yeah, so presumably that's when the professionals leap in.
Right.
Maybe.
And, you know, I mean, I think that's probably pretty good. I'm not sure if anyone, you know, I mean, cars for a start are supposed to be, you know, there are laws about making cars more recyclable. They're only like, what, 85, 90% recyclable?
Yeah, we've seen them recycled. They put them, make them in giant cubes.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
With the James Bond villain inside. So here are renders of Johnny. So, I mean, Steve was very excited about this campus, but you're saying that Johnny Ive did he design the curved glass and all of that stuff?
No, but he's definitely involved. It's done by Rogers in
architecture
London.
Firm. All right. Okay.
Yeah. But you can see him in all the videos. I mean, you know, looking at the models and also, you know, very intimately involved in the design of the thing. They're designing it like an Apple product. I mean, they haven't turned it over to the architects. You know, the money quote in the story there was that Steve said, don't think of me as a client. Think of me as one of the team.
Oh, Lord. I'm sure Roger's like, oh, yeah, okay. It does look gorgeous.
If you keep going, there's one where you can see the Aston Martin in the foreground.
Let's see if we can. No, that's not the Aston.
There's one of those.
There we go. Is that it here?
I think that's it. Yeah, there it is. So I when I saw that, I was like, huh, that's his car for sure.
Well, okay. But one thing we'd like to ask, put my DB9 in the renders. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
That's Johnny Ive parking right there.
I'm going to be selling it on Craigslist in 4 months. I can just recycle the image.
Thank God that Johnny exists. Oh, here's, wait a minute. What is this? Is that, or is that an R8? That looks like I wonder if like there's different Apple principals have their car in the renders, because that's an Audi right there.
Just can't get past the grass walls.
Oh, wait a minute, that's my car. I asked Johnny to do that.
Yeah. That's
well, what about Tim Cook drives? Bill Schiller drives a Porsche.
Schiller drives a Porsche. Ive drives an Aston Martin.
Q has a Ferrari. Scott Forstall.
Q has to have a Ferrari because he's on the board at Ferrari, right? Scott Forstall drives a Yugo.
Yeah, he had a McLaren.
He had a McLaren?
Yeah.
Holy cow. Jiminy.
Mm. Did you see the products that Johnny redesigned for the Product Red auction? What did you think of those?
Oh, the beautiful Leica that he did.
I thought it was really interesting to see, like, if he's just going to be it might give us sort of some insight on what he thinks is important. If we just compare the before and the after. About what he thought could be dressed up with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is it. It's just gorgeous. And this, by the way,
we were joking about like a house built out of like one piece of aluminum. There is a table that is, I think it is an entirely milled product. I think it's like two pieces of aluminum.
I think it's multiple pieces. I think they're using that same CNC unibody process to make it.
To make the Leica? Well, here he is, Johnny, with Bono and some other hip guy. Mark Newsom.
That's Mark Newsom. That's his best friend.
Oh, is it really? Ah, interesting. Yeah. The auction is coming up November 23rd, 4 days, if you'd like to bid on that.
You want a red Mac Pro?
I believe, look at this. Look at these gold, rose gold Apple earbuds. Wow.
Not your 5S.
Now that Russia is no longer accepting those $30 million trips to the International Space Station, that's freeing up some money for these bids.
Johnny and Mark. That's funny. Johnny and Mark. I love it. So Mark is a designer as well?
Yeah. Yep.
Is he at Apple?
No, he runs his own design consultancy, so he does all kinds of stuff. He's done everything from cars to, you know, airplane interiors, motorcycles, furniture.
Where was Johnny Ive before Apple? Was he at IDEO or Frog or one of those big design companies? Or
he was in partnership in his own London design firm, design agency.
And how did they How do they lure him in?
They tried to hire him right out of school, and he didn't want to move. He didn't want to move from London to California. So they gave him a speculative job doing some concepts for a tablet, a Newton tablet. And
here's Bono talking about the Johnny Ive Red auction.
So theatrical. Early on, you never seen three, four, one, in the three, two, five, even.
He's doing the auction. They plan to raise a lot of money. I think the Leica alone is expected to go for, what was it, $350,000?
Yeah.
$6
million. Okay. What? $6 million. Pardon me, I was down.
Always looking to get the best and the brightest.
Leica collectors are insane, and there's only one of this one.
Yeah.
People who are the most vulnerable. There's some great rhyme in that. And in design, that's it.
Okay. So don't ask a rock and roller to be coherent on video, because it's not going to happen.
The sale itself is going to have a number of objects which, loosely speaking, break down to either works that Johnny and Mark just really liked, or objects they really liked but they couldn't help but tinker with them, or most tantalizingly of all, you've got these objects where they've actually designed them from the ground upwards, which is really an incredible collaboration to see two of our time's most distinct designers who were able to come together. This really is a once-off. I mean, it's like a Donatello and Michelangelo meeting point.
So wow.
It's extraordinary.
Who's Michelangelo?
The history of design, the scene through.
So Mark did an interview. I wonder if Johnny... there's Johnny.
It is that it really does cross lots of
boundaries. This is Mark Newson talking.
All of these works have an incredible sort of philosophical value and historical value within the context.
This is on the Sotheby's site if you want to watch the video in toto. But because boy, really some beautiful stuff.
The criteria that we both had was we just both wanted to own each one really badly. And there is a real thread that runs through these objects, from a telescope to a spacesuit to a pen to watchmaking tools to a scooter and a cross product.
This is kind of a dream thing for a designer to do.
Such incredibly different places to do very different things.
Ah, did you see that?
Designer.
That was a product, Red Mac Pro.
Yep.
Ooh. One of a kind, no doubt.
I want to ask you, so what did Joni do as a student that got Apple hot for him? I can understand as an independent contractor doing some work that, especially stuff that might have been subcontract for Apple, but if I was surprised to learn that as a student, Apple wanted him. What did he do?
Yeah, he did white phones.
Really?
In white plastic, yeah.
But there must have been something. He was a straight-A student. That's probably it.
Oh, yeah. He won us as a competition. Yeah.
He just interviewed really well. He's just one of those guys.
We put him in a white room, and seemed right.
He wore the heck out of that T-shirt.
What kind of phones was he designing back then? That would have been 92, 93?
He got recruited in 92. This is back in the late 80s.
Yeah.
So he graduated like 89, I think.
I've reimagined the princess phone to be a floating white object, except for the wire connected to the wall.
Well, it was an old landline phone.
Yeah, it'd have to be a landline phone, right?
And it was shaped like a weird question mark. So, and actually Jackie Chan wanted to use it in some sci-fi movie he was making. But Johnny wouldn't let him use it because it was too delicate. They thought he would get destroyed. But he took it out to show Robert Bruner in California, and Bruner was blown away because he had figured out not just how it looked, but also how it was going to be manufactured. So when he took it to pieces, it had all the internals and all the part lines, and he knew exactly how a molding machine was going to put it together. And he said, you never see that in a student. You never, ever see that in a student. They're always, they're only concerned with how it's going to look. They never consider how it's going to be made, and that's really what distinguished him. That's why he got made, the head of the design department when he was like 26.
Wow.
After coming to Apple. He'd only been there for 3 or 4 years, but he was just, he knew, the whole business from, he was just like Steve Jobs. He could get the big picture, but he was also really into the details, so he knew exactly what kind of screws he needed and that kind of stuff.
He had hair in those days. Here's a picture of him as a sixth former in Stafford. With the big hair. Here's a Johnny Ive then and now picture. He looks like Benny Hill on the left there, but it's actually Johnny Ive. I'm finding this stuff in trying to find the phone. If I can figure out where the phone is, this is an article.
It's not on the web.
There's an article in the Mail that says, "How did this art school graduate become Sir Johnny Ive?" Right, and it does list many of his creations. He created the Luxo lamp iMac. And I remember in the Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, they talk about how hard it was to make it the arm so that that after a few months, the screen wouldn't just slowly sink. He did the MacBook Air, which is such a great design that every single computer company in the world has copied it. Mm-hmm. Pretty remarkable. If you think about his body of work, I don't think there's anybody. He did the Bondi Blue iMac. He did the iPods. There's nobody who's
he's won more black pencil awards than most companies combined.
It's really quite a remarkable. Here's a picture of him with his Luxo lamp iMac.
I still think that's one of the greatest designs ever.
It's beautiful,
because not only did it look awesome and cool, not only was it perfectly functional, because you've seen so many designs that might have been sort of like this, but this get wibbly wobbly after a week or two. But also, when you realize that this is a heavy, like 15-18 pound computer, and it retained the idea from the original Mac and even the first iMac that it has a carrying handle. If you need to move a couple of these from one classroom to another or from one part of the house to the other, that stainless steel chrome arm is a perfect carrying handle for it. It's like, well, man, the more you think about this design.
He put handles on all of his early machines.
Yeah.
Every single one. So
according to Isaacson, was Steve's idea. In fact, he said, back to the drawing board, Johnny, you need to put a handle on this. Maybe I'm misremembering.
You know, my research was because it was Johnny's idea, and Steve didn't even ask him why. And Johnny did it because
you're right. Yes.
People to touch it.
Yes.
And it wasn't to carry it around. It was like to say, here, the handle says,
you
can touch me.
You could carry it around.
It makes it less intimidating and more friendly. And then you see this thread going through all of his products. Like, you know, even the iPod really was an early stab at the iPhone and the iPad. It's an early simple touch interface.
Right.
And he did this with all of his other products too, like going back to a pen and the Newton, the message pad. He always added what he called the fiddle factor. He wanted people to touch his products. And so he would make them. He would expressly design all these little touches to encourage people to touch him.
And yet that phony design as a student, it was too fragile to touch.
It was too fragile for Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
To
maybe touch. He learned. Yeah, exactly. Maybe it was just Jackie Chan. Yeah.
He got better. He was only young.
Yeah. I mean, well, and if you think about it, Newcastle Polytechnic is probably, I'm not familiar with it, but given that it's in Newcastle, for one thing, it's probably not the hotbed of design talent.
Well, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, I didn't know it. No, it's the best design school in the country.
What?
Yeah.
This is Newcastle on Tyne. All right. You wouldn't think
he got grades good enough to get into Oxford and Cambridge.
But he went to Newcastle.
But he went to Newcastle instead. I know. And that was a head scratcher. But then I found out that it's like one of the top design schools in the world.
You would think Northumbria would be the first place people would want to go. I mean, you think London would be the center of design at least in Great Britain. Oh, interesting. All right. I take it all back for our fans in Newcastle. My apologies.
It's pretty grim up there.
I'm just thinking of winter. That's all.
Yeah. It's cold and it rains.
Grim.
They're good beer, though.
And known for coal. Coal to Newcastle, right? I mean, it's a coal town.
Right. Exactly. Shipbuilding and coal.
Yeah. Interesting. Great beer, of course. You have to have great beer if you live in Newcastle. Again, I've offended. I apologize. really, Johnny Ive is remarkable, but and more so because he is so private. I think you tried to go like through a friend of a friend,
right?
And then Apple did not even respond to your request.
Yeah, and I didn't hear from Apple. I mean, I made a few requests to them too. I mean, maybe I'm a bit jaded because I've worked, you know, I've been reporting there for 20-odd years, so I didn't really have very high expectations. But of course, you know, I only got a call until, you know, 2 weeks before the book's going to come out. Then I get a call. They want to see an advanced copy.
Oh, well, sorry. And, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for all the cooperation. No.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't expect any. You know, I was hoping he would do like a Princess Di. You know how she worked with her biographer Andrew Morton behind the scenes,
right?
And gave people permission to talk. But then I found out he sealed all his records going all the way back to his high school, so you can't even get hold of his high school transcripts, his college transcripts. The college wouldn't talk to me because they, you know, he's a visiting professor there now, and they're using a lot of his marketing materials. So, you know, it was pretty hard, but I eventually got, you know, some of his, I got an old teacher, a couple of his old teachers, an old professor to talk, and then his colleagues, all of his colleagues in London ended up talking to me. So I got a great history about his early career in London. And then I got talking to, you know, well, Satsuki and then some other designers and then a bunch of engineers. So in the end, it worked out okay.
What is your sense of why? Is he just very private, or is he hiding a checkered past?
He's a classic, you know, it's a combination of two things. One, he's got your classic, you know, British reserve personality.
Yes.
He does not want to call attention to himself. Yeah. And two is Apple. Apple's, you know, secrecy. They're so controlling. I mean, they put him in all the videos. Every time they come out with a product, they do a short video of him. You know, that's why he's trapped in that white room.
Right.
And they want to talk about the design story, but they don't want him to talk too frankly about the design story. Like that Luxo lamp, for example. I mean, that was 2.5 years of real hacks. They even actually had to call an IDEO to help them solve that. And of course, they don't want to talk about this. So, you know, Jobs was like, he took a leaf out of Walt Disney's book, and he didn't want to talk. He didn't want people to see the sausage being made.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Right. So they don't want this stuff to come out. But, you know, I think this is the most fascinating stuff, you know, how they solve these problems.
I agree.
Yeah, is great. And I think it's a valuable thing to be told, too. It's valuable history. These products are so universal. I mean, they're not, you know, they have such huge cultural impact. The story of how they get made, I think, is an important story to be told.
You've got a modern day Da Vinci, and it's a shame that it is not. But and I understand and I honor his desire for privacy. That's certainly his right to choose that. But let's not. I mean, I understand Apple's need for secrecy before a product's announced.
Right.
And I completely understand Steve Jobs saying the product speaks for itself. But now in hindsight, you've got a modern day Da Vinci. Let's see his notebooks.
Yeah, that's exactly. Because
he doesn't get any credit either. You know, like Steve, I think, stocked up a lot of the credit. For good and for ill.
Supposedly that, again, Walter Isaacson says that bothered Johnny.
Yeah.
That Steve would go up on stage and say, I've created this wonderful thing.
I know. And the truth is a lot more complex, obviously. In fact, that was what I was kind of worried about. Like when I was doing the book, it was like the myth, the Jobs myth is much better than the messy reality. I'm like, who's going to read this? It sucks, you know? They want to read about how Steve Jobs woke up in the bathtub and dreamt up the iPhone.
Yeah. It's exactly what we want to read about.
It's a much better story. Actually, one of the funny things is, you know, the story about the Luxor Lamp iMac, I mean, they said they got the idea from taking a walk in Jobs' garden down in Palo Alto, and they're looking at the sunflowers. And one of the executives that worked for Steve for more than a decade, for longer, in fact, said that story was bullshit. It was made up.
Wow.
They made that up to tell the press. And I was flabbergasted. I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
Don't understand that Steve Jobs is a marketer and was a marketer from day one and was completely willing to tell any story to make this picture and felt completely justified in lying in any way he wanted to.
Right.
Because that's
he
not
said it was in the. He was in the presentation, this executive, so when they had two versions of the machine. One was this kind of gooseneck thing. An early version of that. And in fact, they built this amazing mechanism to hold it on originally. And then a flat screen one that was a big fat, you know, machine. And Jobs wanted something that was anthropomorphic. He wanted something that looked like a face. So they chose the gooseneck one. And then it was like 2.5 years of work to try to make
it work. How do you make it work? Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, they went back to, you know, the flat screen iMac was back to that sort of original idea. But they had to wait till the components were a little bit thinner to squeeze it in. Yeah, this executive called it a freak. He hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I think, or actually, it was Andy who said that. I think it's just an iconic design. And it's clearly influenced by Pixar's Luxo lamp trademark. Isn't it?
Well, the original, they had this, you can look up the patterns and you can see the illustrations in the patterns. They had this crazy ball and socket neck that had about 20 ball and sockets with these cables inside and a hook on the screen. So when you when you undid the hook, it loosened the cables and you could reposition the neck. And then when you tighten the hook, it would tension the cables and it would pull it all back together again. And the designers talk about it as one of the best things they ever did. But kids couldn't manipulate it. They couldn't get children to undo the cam. And so that's why they went eventually with that Luxo lamp thing.
It was one of the best things they ever did in the sense that they solved a problem in an elegant way, but not from the point of view of a user. You got to remember, loosen the cam, loosen the wires, reposition, tighten the wires. Very important. Right. You do it in that order. No, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Not just for kids. That's a terrible idea. Wow, this is fascinating. I cannot wait to read the book. Leander Connie's new book on Johnny Ive is in bookstores now, and as I mentioned, on audible.com now. There's still lots more Mac news. We're going to take a break, come back and talk about it. But first, a word from Shutterstock.com. This is a great place to go. Now, admittedly, not all of us have an eye, but I think if you're a blogger or you have a restaurant, you have a menu, I think if you are making videos, often you need beautiful images, and Shutterstock is the place to go with over 30 million stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and videos available royalty-free. That means you pay once. You can use it in any medium, in any form you like. Gorgeous stuff, too. We're getting to that time of year, aren't we? Here's a seasonal cheer light box. The light boxes are neat. If you make a free Shutterstock account right now, you don't need to give them a credit card or anything. Just make that free account. You can start saving images into the light box, share it with others, all without buying them. I mean, they'll have the Shutterstock watermark, of course, but it's a great way to kind of collect inspiration, collect ideas, and that's free. You can do it with their amazingly beautiful iPad app, too, if you'd like. The search engine at Shutterstock, I've mentioned this before, is really sophisticated. Search not only for objects, but modifiers. Like, you can modify it by color. In fact, you can do it with their amazing spectrum tool, so you can get exactly the shades that you need. But you can also modify it via adjectives. You could say, you know, sad Christmas, and you get sad Christmas stuff. This is an amazing, wow, what is that, the Mr. Hanky Christmas tree? Well, that's, I don't want that. By the way, click the, doesn't it? Am I wrong? But that's it. There's a huge variety. Let me just put it that way. Shutterstock.com's, click that video tab for 1.4 million of the best royalty-free stock videos too. They add 18,000 new videos this week alone. They add, and they, as I said, 30 million images, and they've added well over 100,000 images this week alone. Always carefully curated, so they are, you know, really what you need. Shutterstock.com. You can try them today and get a great big discount, 25% off on your new account. You know, if you're going to do that, you should do the subscription because you'll get the best savings. We have a 25 image a day subscription, great for publications. And if you're going to take 25% off that, you're going to get a great deal. You know, all we ask is that you use our offer code, which is simply enough, MacBreak1113, because we're in November 2013. So free to create the account. Go ahead and use the light boxes and share images, search for images, have all that inspiration and fun. Use the iPad app. If you decide to buy, use our offer code MacBreak1113. You'll save 25% at Shutterstock.com. Hey, here's some good news. The Apple II disk operating system source code, you can read it. It's being published by the Computer History Museum in Digibarn from the 1978 Apple II. Wow. That would be fun to look at, wouldn't it? I didn't know this, but it was contracted out to a guy from a company called Shepardson Microsystems. Paul Lawton wrote it in 7 weeks in the spring of 1978. He got paid $13,000 for it. The source code being released is scans of original documents that he has kept over the last 30 years. What a cool thing to be able to look at. I mean, 6502 source code is kind of ugly, but it's also kind of simple. So yeah, makes it very easy for you to look at it and see what he did. I think students should be looking at this. And this is an example of like what we were just saying. I think after a while, there's a certain value to, you know, showing the notebooks.
Yeah. No, it's it really is part of the elevation of programming as a respect for a real measure of craftsmanship that it is. It's just like when you take apart an old desk and you see the dovetails and you see that they chose a certain kind of wood that was not going to be seen just because it was a good, for the same reason as, hey, I know these holes are I don't want these holes to distend when we bend them. So I really love seeing these projects where this where the source code of code projects becomes published. It lets you, particularly when from that era, when you can have one person who wrote the entire operating system, and you can see this one developer's fingerprints everywhere.
Yeah. How about this? This has been around for a while, but the source code by Randy Wigginton and a guy named Woz for the very sophisticated, in fact, many people think kind of scarily brilliant disk drivers for the original Apple II. And it's, you know, even if you don't understand source code, just read the comments is fun, you know? And to think that Woz and Randy Wigginton wrote this in 1978, I mean, it's just, I just think this is cool.
This is, it taps into something that's really elemental about the human experience. I mean, when I see the source code for that kind of stuff, it really is like a couple generations ago, if a song that was being played all the time in high school suddenly comes back 20 years later, because this was like the stuff that I loved when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14.
Memories.
I lived in DOS and, my investigations into the unique modifications that Electronic Arts and other game makers made to the operating system to improve the security of their games caused me to really understand.
I spent a little time with that source code and disassembly. Yes, indeed.
And it's exactly.
With a hex editor. I know where you're going here.
So yeah, it's like when I look at this, it's like I'm looking at like a car that I coveted when I was in high school. Yeah. I'm glad to see this stuff happening. There's a great article that I found a link to on Twitter where someone is trying to disassemble the Star Raiders cartridge from the Atari 2600. Oh. And, of course, because he is an engineer, he has these disassembly tools. So he was trying to figure out exactly how they were doing all this animation. And it's like what you say. You get to see the notebooks. You get to see – you don't have the notes of the guy or the man or woman that wrote this game initially. But you get to see, oh, there's how they got this trick. They're actually using this part of audio memory to store some bitmaps in because they realize they can move data out of it faster. And then you realize that, wow, it's a question of finding problems and solving problems step by step by step.
It's just so cool. It reminds me of going to the Rock and Roll History Museum. I can't remember if it was in the one in Cleveland or the one – or Paul Allen's in Seattle. I think it was in Cleveland, and seeing John Lennon's handwritten lyrics were in my life. I mean, you just look at that and there isn't any words for it. It's just awe, right? Mm-hmm.
A look behind the curtains.
Yeah. I think that this is so important, and that's why I think what Leander's doing, and it just, and I wish people would be a little more, you know, if part of it is a maybe false, maybe not humility, where they say, oh, I wasn't that important. Oh, you don't really. You know what? No more false humility. It's important. You're a sir now. You can
also go, Renee.
I was going to say, it's like the X-Files or Planetary. It's the archaeology of the unknown. It's the stuff that, it's a secret history of our culture. And I think it's fantastic when it gets preserved this way.
Apple, this broke while we were talking about on Twit on Sunday about Apple. And the Xbox One, Xbox One comes out in 3 days with a Kinect, but a Kinect apparently has been completely designed from the ground up by Microsoft because the company that designed Kinect Prime Sense has been purchased by Apple, an Israeli company. The deal said to be worth about $345 million. We'd seen a rumor about this in an Israeli newspaper, news site, I guess, in last summer, and Apple denied it, and Prime Sense denied it, but apparently it has happened now.
Or it's in the final stages.
I met the CEO of that company on an airplane several years ago, and he told me they'd been talking to Apple, and he didn't want to go to Apple because they were a pain in the ass.
They didn't want to do it, yeah. In fact, I remember the story of how Microsoft found out about it was on an airplane. I can't remember who it was at Microsoft, but he heard about this technology and he called them. And PrimeSense had been talking to Apple already, and but it was so much easier to license to Microsoft. So what I mean, would Apple want to connect to go with its Apple TV? It sounds to me like this can revive the rumors of an Apple TV. This is a very interesting technology, a sensor that can see you in space, see your movements.
Apple makes a lot of panels, not just television panels, and gestures and touch are, you know, part of their DNA now. But, you know, as they themselves have said, you don't want to physically touch every surface in every position. It's just not ergonomically friendly. And when you deal with 10-foot distances or, you know, as you go forward into the future, it doesn't make sense to have to physically touch anything. So I think it would be absurd of Apple not to be doing everything they can to investigate air gestures and, you know, abstract gestures. That kind of direct manipulation is just so natural. Kids today are growing up using an iPad. They're not growing up using keyboards and mice anymore. And we're going to need solutions for them as they get to more sophisticated or more familial environments.
Not only that, but if we don't even necessarily have to be that literal, that such a component could be really valuable just in the sense of telling the CPU, there are three people in the room. Two of them are facing the screen. One of them is not. Based on the size of this person and their gestures, I believe that the identities of these two people are Roger and Steve. And here, so let's do settings that are going to be appropriate for Roger and Steve who are looking at the screen right now, and forget about adjustments to the operating system or the interface for this other person who clearly is doing something else right now.
Well, that's exactly what Kinect. In fact, connecting Xbox One, I think, can recognize up to six different people in the room. It's amazing.
I mean, I think it would be non-trivial for Apple to solve the problem of creating a library of gestures that people are going to want to use instead of, you know, picking up a remote, touching a button that clearly says touch this to play, scroll this to select something in a list. It's a non-trivial exercise. So I think that it would have to be a breakthrough akin to Apple solving Apple looking at voice commands and building something like Siri, not something as literal as what science fiction has always said it to be, or what we've seen in other devices before.
As late as Liz Gaines writing for All Things D, as late as I guess it was Sunday morning, said it's not official yet, close to complaint.
You got to think, like, you know, exactly to Andy's point, Siri is much more than just listening to your voice. And an eyesight camera is on almost every Apple device now. And if that could have intelligence, then there's just so many possibilities that they could do with these things moving forward.
I have to say, though, I've used the Leap Motion. I've tried many of these devices. I've used the Kinect on the Xbox 360. And I don't know. Do you really? I mean, Kinect on the Xbox. Yeah, now, you can make it better. Obviously, it's early days, but, you know, I can never get it to do the thing it's supposed to do. And it's really a lot harder than pointing a remote at it or using your voice, which Apple obviously has the capability of as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the next things Apple could do that'd be really, really cool is to really turn Apple TV into a standing up device instead of a sitting down device. Not only for like fitness apps and stuff like that, that's another natural thing for those kind of sensors. But also, my living room is like on the way from the kitchen to the front door to get to my car. So many, if that screen had a way that could simply pause in front of it and do one last check of email or just do something just to wake it up without having to find the remote or without having to like stop and like direct my voice at something and to control it very, very simply with a set of gestures. That would enhance the value of the Apple TV. And when when you look at where Apple's making its money these days and what this sort of a hardware would be able to provide, you really are looking more at iOS devices and consumer devices, and you're not really thinking so much about desktops anymore.
Well, you do have an interesting part in the video where the poor guy is cooking and needs more directions and he's covered in food.
That's
he just
the
swipes
problem.
At his Mac and it goes to the next direction page for him.
And also, we've just had our nails done. We don't want to touch the screen.
Andy and I are mocking the Samsung product launch for the Galaxy S4,
we
which
are
featured
mocking them.
Exactly that. So good. If you've been cooking and you've got flour on your hands or your nails or nail paint is wet, nail varnish is wet. I mean, maybe it could be great. I just, every experience I've had with these have been very disappointing. The Leap, which promised much, delivered very little.
They're terrible until they're not, Leo.
Yeah. Okay. I'll accept that. They're still terrible.
It's not that tablets were terrible. It's just no one had figured out how to make a tablet that is approachable.
Well, that's true. I tried every tablet for 10 years. I tried tablets. Never happy. I'm curious if seaturtle.org is still working for tracking the. Did you hear about this? a site that is promoting the saving sea turtles. They invite you to adopt a sea turtle for the holiday. Also, reasons completely unknown, has a check iPhone 5S, iPad Air, iPad Mini, and Retina availability at your Apple Store grid.
You get attention for the turtles.
What's good for the turtles is good for me. Apple has not shut them down, and maybe it's because Apple likes sea turtles too. They shut everybody else down, didn't they?
In the next to final act of this movie, we find out that sea turtle is actually an acronym for something very sinister.
So you can, of course, much more useful to you would be to enter in your zip code and so forth. But for our purposes, looking at this availability grid is actually very useful. The number you see, now that I see the numbers are going up, the number you see is how recently this was checked. And in some cases, as recently as a minute ago, but in other cases, hours ago. If it is green, that means availability. So what they've done is they've taken the different models and they've spread them across this spreadsheet. We'll just talk about the Wi-Fis, for instance. And green means availability. So there is pretty good availability, it looks like, in most stores. Not of every model, but at least one or two models seem to be available almost everywhere. This kind of surprises me for the Mini with Retina. I thought for sure that this would be... In fact, did we not speculate this would be a very short supply product? But apparently...
It is for an Apple product.
32 gig gray is pretty widely available, as is 32 gig silver. Everybody wants the bigger ones, probably.
Yeah.
Or the smaller ones. You either come in and say, I want the cheapest one you got, or I want the biggest one you got. But very few people buy in the middle. But if, for instance, here in the Renaissance Mall at Colony Park in Mississippi, you can pretty much get anything you want. They got green all across. It's lit up green all across the way. On the other hand, if you go to King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, you got a very limited supply. There's no rhyme or reason. And for some reason, Westtown, Wisconsin, they got none. Nothing. So I think that's... Thank you, seaturtle.org. I hope that your mission continues. Save the sea turtles. And if you're in the market for an iPad, apparently there are places you can go. You can pick them up still, which is kind of good news. Renee, you think this is what was expected?
Not expected. I think it's the reality of Apple dealing with far greater supply constraints than they'd otherwise like during the holiday season.
But they have plenty of them, it looks like.
They have plenty of them, but compared to, usually when they have vast containers of them dropping off of planes and giant lineups and, tons of pre-orders available instantly. Apple's not selling 100, 100 of these. They're trying to sell 100 million of them.
I wonder if maybe they're not selling as well as they anticipated.
We'll have to find out. They haven't put out any press releases on them, but I'd be surprised if they're not a hot holiday item.
Speculative at this point.
I guess I love it, so I'm a booster. By the way, I didn't mention your Mini site, Leander. So let me do that now. JohnnyIveBook.com. If you want to read up on it and get it, best to buy a copy through there, I would imagine, because you get a little bit extra affiliate fees there. When I buy an author's book on Amazon, I always like to go through their site. It actually ends up being more money than
I think people should go get them from the independent bookstore,
Yeah. Oh, really? You want to? Awesome. Awesome.
Later, I can ask you a question directly that I wasn't able to ask about the Steve Jobs book. Did it really kind of like intimidate the designer of your book who was putting together this cover, knowing that if this does not look like a beautiful Johnny Ive style design, it will stand out like a sore thumb? Did they panic about this?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Luckily, the guy that designed it is a huge Johnny Ive fan, so he busted his chops to do it right. Again, the image was a huge problem.
Really?
Because, like I said, the Apple has bought up the rights, just like they did with Steve Jobs, to all the pictures. So it's very hard to get a picture that's licensed for things like book jackets. And this was actually taken in London a couple of years ago.
So it's public domain or somehow usable.
Well, what they do is...
Looks like a studio shot.
It was a new shot. What Apple has done is gone past and bought the rights to all the new shots and tied up the rights. And they did this with Steve Jobs too. I mean, it's very difficult to get an image of Steve Jobs that he will license for something like a book. That's why if you look at a lot of the books by Steve Jobs, all the images suck, except for Walter Isaacson's.
You wrote Inside Steve's Brain. Did that have a picture of Steve on it? I forgot.
It did, yeah. I forget where they got the image. Actually, it was a silhouette.
Ah.
You know what? I've completely forgotten what it did have.
You cannot copyright silhouettes, I guess. Trademark them.
Maybe that's the only solution to the problem.
It's a silhouette. Let me see. Let's show it up. Show us the book. Oh yeah, look at that. But go ahead, Chet. There we go. It's very obviously Steve because you got the glasses and the honker.
Yeah, it's a pretty sort of iconic looking silhouette.
And the Leo Laporte charm offensive against Apple continues yet another week.
Hey, he had a honker. I got a honker. You know, my silhouette would be pretty distinctive.
Have you bought up all your pictures, Leo? Are you protected?
Oh, God, I cannot control all the images.
What you should have done was you should just like hired a guy, just like keep following following Joni or Ive around, wait for him to be like at Subway, like opening about to eat like a big submarine sandwich. And say, okay, we shot this on public land. This is going to be the cover of the book unless you give us something better.
Was that a silhouette inside Steve's brain? That actually looks like it was a silhouette of an actual picture. It kind of does look like that. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was. It was a Reuters picture or something like that.
He's got like a microphone on, so it's obviously the keynote.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good picture, actually. It's very obviously Steve Jobs.
Yeah. And the original one, they colored it because this is a later edition. I added a couple of chapters. But the original one, I think, would look really nice in black and white.
Ah, neat. Yeah, this is the old Apple.
You know, that's such a good point. It seems anytime you associate like more than one color with Apple, it just screams out 1983.
Yeah. $100 off the iPhone 5S if you want the 16 gigs at AT&T. That means what? $199 or no?
$199.
Wow, that's a good deal. Thursday, Apple updated iOS to 7.04, patching unnamed security bugs and a FaceTime flaw. Was crashing on FaceTime or something?
6.5
for the old folks.
7.1 beta. 7.1 beta yesterday.
What? Really?
Yep.
What have they fixed?
Everything. I mean, just there's the list of fixes. I mean, obviously it's under NDA, but the list of fixes is long.
So it could be soon if they're doing the beta?
They didn't say a number. Like it just looked like iOS 7.1 beta, not beta 1. Usually they'll do like several betas and it'll take, you know, a few weeks, a few months. But who knows what their agenda is for this one. It's about a year since Scott Forstall left and they did their 180. So This just could be them, you know, tidying up everything they did with 7.0.
I'm looking forward to seeing. I do think that sometime in the next 4 months or 6 months, we're going to see a lot of tweaks to the interface and to the design language that Apple will not acknowledge in a press release.
Right.
I think they're collecting a lot of feedback over now, especially now that the initial shock of the difference is people are over that. And now people are left with, well, this is legitimately, I'm still having a problem with this tool. So Apple pays such close attention, they don't necessarily put in a press release, but I think we're going to be able to compare 7.1 or 7.2 to 7.0 and see where they decided that they needed to roll things back a bit or change things.
Well, they do continue to roll out the leatherless, stitchless versions of their apps. If you updated Find My Friends today, which was really kind of egregiously still skeuomorphic.
Yeah.
Kind of shocking.
Steve Jobs' airplane sofa.
Yeah. It's so funny because once you jump that from everything else, the one, you know, app that's still, in fact, I haven't updated so I can show you. It's still so.
It looks like a Galaxy Note 3.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of stunningly skeuomorphic still.
Except this looks like real leather.
Yeah. I'll hide this for a moment while I sign in. Yeah. It looks just like real leather. Because it's what? It's from Steve's Gulfstream, right?
Yeah, which is kind of funny because everyone is saying the deforestalization of iOS is complete or Forestall is finally gone. When, you know, he was implementation. This was not the leather from his airplane. It was not the texture he wanted
Steve's
everywhere.
Steve's airplane.
Yeah. I have to admit that has bothered me since he left, that people, people have been talking as though he was a horrible influence, and now that he's gone, everything that we don't like about the iOS and macOS is going to go away, and we just don't know what he was responsible for, what he was not responsible for, what fights he won, what fights he lost. So
I guess I do have
it's not being mean to Scott Forstall, for heaven's sake.
Well, and is it
he gave us carbon?
That's right. Is it fair to say I did update Find My Friends? Darn it! Oh rats. I forgot they have auto update.
Leo.
Yeah, so no more leather. I miss my leather. Is it safe to say that Johnny Ive was one of the real opponents of all of this, Leander?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you can see it because if you look at the prototypes that were leaked during the Apple-Samsung trial.
You got the leather. You got the stitch.
And he's got leather.
Don't update it. Don't update it.
Vintage. That's vintage leather, Andy.
It is wrong because I don't actually have two friends. But someday
that icon needs to be updated.
It's aspirational, like the Mac Pro.
Sorry, Leander, you were saying.
If you look at the prototypes for the iPhone, all those models that were released during the Apple Samsung trial, they all have a fake iOS that was printed out and stuck on the screens because the hardware teams weren't allowed to see what the software teams were up to, and vice versa.
Oh, interesting.
But the stickers look just like iOS 7, very flat, very simple.
The original, you're saying the original iPhone look was flat.
Yeah.
And then somebody came along.
Well, Johnny
got skewed morphed out.
Huh.
I heard that, the stories I heard about Scott Forstall was that he was much more forceful than, that he wasn't just the implementer. He took inspiration from Jobs' Learjet, but, things like the App Store, that was Steve wanted the App Store from the iPhone in the first 2 weeks after release. But it was Forstall blocking it for however long it was, 18 months, 2 years. That's the story I heard. I don't know if it's true. Never put it to Scott himself.
I heard the exact opposite one, so who knows?
Yeah, I heard the opposite of that.
Huh.
That's basically our unnamed source that told us don't tell anybody.
You know what it is? It's like Hitler in the bunker. Everybody... Everybody's trying to figure out what Adolf wants, and
at least you still have Cupertino privileges. You're allowed to buy a bagel at a bagel shop at Cupertino.
Not much longer.
It's like,
go to Panera Bread across from the
house. Not much longer.
You're going to have to move the studios closer, deeper in Marin before the... I'm sorry, but I interrupt. Please do keep comparing this to Hitler.
Oh, okay. Hitler's a bad example. Let's use Saddam Hussein. If you have, okay, Kim Il-jun, that's fine. Whatever. If you have a totalitarian leader, everybody's trying to figure out, well, what does he want? And may even be aggressive in pursuing an agenda that's not what the fearless leader wants, but in an attempt to preserve their position on the island, it's never going anywhere.
That's an interesting thought, though. I've always thought that one of the reasons why, in retrospect, one of the reasons why the original iOS has all that gloss and all those shadows was to cover up the defects of the relatively low-resolution display. It wasn't until those effects started being shown on Retina that we realized that shadow. You realize that without the shadow there, we don't have to see how jagged. They can increase the anti-aliasing, and we don't have to notice that the curve of that isn't really very good. I've always thought that was the reason why.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's just speculation on my part.
I think though, knowing Apple and how Apple works, there's also a deep philosophy at work, and that the deep philosophy was we have to make this somehow. Like real life, because then people will be better able to understand it and use it. However, in time, people become digital natives. We can go to a digital native interface. And I think that's all consistent. You don't have to make up a story about Scott Forstall being, Adolf Eichmann or anything.
Training wheels come off.
It's the training wheels come off. It was a logical thing in the beginning, and it makes sense when the transition is logical too. And it's all consistent with this kind of underlying design philosophy that's let's make it as easy as possible to use. Let's make it intuitive. You want people to be able to use it. Thank you. You want people to be able to use it without. Did I say okay, Google Now at some point? It thinks I did. Stop
it. You have to have a processor and a system that can actually push all the graphics, like all the all these layers of fade and translucency and Gaussian blur are not easy on hardware. That wouldn't even be possible on an original iPhone.
Right.
Isn't it funny how iOS 6 looks really dated now?
It looked actually, it started looking dated a lot earlier than that. Like, especially, I see what you mean, yeah.
If you're using the beta, yeah. But, you know, for like, and does anyone hate on it anymore? Is anyone hating on iOS 7?
No, you get used to it. I'm not fond of it.
Not the internet.
I'm not fond of it. You get used to it.
I think it looks awesome. I think it's great.
Used. Awesome. I wouldn't use the word awesome. I can tolerate it.
I think it looks very, very good. My only difficulty with it remains that I think that there are times when the user interface really, a user interface really needs to shout at you or be really talk to you in a firm voice. And I don't think iOS has the ability to say, look, this button here, this, I know your eyes are darting all over the screen, but this is the button that you want to push next. This is where, right.
I know
this
you're
is where
drunk,
that function
but I'm over here.
hey, big boy, over here.
I just don't like the excessive use of open space.
It's unfinished. Like, there's some screens that are hauntingly beautiful, that are amazing looking, and there are some that look like they're just not finished yet.
It feels like the kerning's wrong kind of a thing. But you're a designer. I'm not.
There's behaviors that don't quite work. Some of the stuff renders on top. There's stuff in it that needs to be finished.
I think it's completely reasonable to expect a 7.1 to come along that responds to a lot of these complaints. Mm-hmm. But I'm still not a big iOS 7 fan. But, you know, I thought Android was good looking for years, so I got no taste. Hey, Leander, don't laugh too loud. You guys still got the cult of Android to think about. Yeah.
Some of the developer versions of Android are really gorgeous, but, you know, the stock one I don't like at all.
Really?
Yeah.
I like KitKat. You know, it just shows you. It's a matter of taste. Taste is taste. It's not objective. It's subjective.
There's elements of both. Like, there are things that objectively, structurally work. There are principles, like consistency is easier for people to remember and muscle memory. Right. But then you're right. Everything is subjective, like the colors you choose, the size of things.
Right.
So there's both. It's like there are some movies that I know are brilliant and I just don't like. And there are some incredibly crappy movies that I know are incredibly crappy and I love them. And I'm okay with that, you know, duality.
I kind of... one of the things that drew me into the Apple sphere in the early days of Macintosh, very early on, was the Macintosh user interface guidelines. And I thought they were inspired, and probably mostly inspired by Jeff Raskin, who was then hounded out of Apple by Steve Jobs. But the things that they talked about, I had, you know, remember we were in the world of Windows, 3.0? No, not even that. We were still in DOS land. The things that they talked about, the idea of, they called it monotony, that there should be exactly one way to do anything. You know, and Microsoft's famous for there's 20 ways to do anything. And in the early days of the Macintosh, the idea was there's one way. You learn that way, and that's the way. And that way, you don't have to think about it. It becomes a path, and you will use it more fluidly. I really loved those. And to some degree, as with anything, over time, those have eroded a little bit. But at least Apple was thinking about it.
Now, Windows Phone is very consistent.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. Yeah. I'm not using a Windows Phone, but there's something to be said for that.
I just got my Nexus 5, and I turned it on, and I looked at KitKat, and the icons are all still different sizes and have different cutout shapes and different levels of gloss and flatness. And for me, that's like nails on a chalkboard, but some people love that.
Yep.
I'm just glad to see that almost every major mobile operating system is taking inspiration from each one of them.
Yeah.
Because I hope that the designers of Android and Windows Phone and iOS are all playing with each other's all the other devices and seeing things. Oh God, look at the differences in gloss and size and icons. We should never do that. But also saying, gee, that's an interesting take on that. We thought that wouldn't work, but now that I see it actually as part of an operating system, I kind of like that. So.
Well, and you do have to honor iOS 7's, what was obviously iOS 7's goal, which was to take a step back, rethink this, and let us recreate something that is more homogeneous in a good way, homogeneous in a good way.
Google apps on iOS are fascinating to me because you have the Holo guidelines on Android, but then you have Google's implementation on iOS, which isn't exactly iOS 7, but is, you know, gorgeous in its own right. Yeah.
Their best designers are obviously working for the Apple team, not for the Android team. Apple has kicked a Bitcoin app from the App Store. Coinbase's Bitcoin app, still can buy it on Android. This is a Y Combinator startup that offered a Bitcoin buying and trading platform for consumers, had APIs for developers to integrate Bitcoin coin payments into apps and websites. Apple hasn't told Coinbase why the app was pulled. Not sure myself, but I don't know if this signifies. You can't tell with Apple. Maybe there was just something wrong with the app. They didn't like the gradient on the coin. Or maybe there's a philosophical bias against Bitcoin at Apple. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I wonder. They never really explained, do they, why they pull stuff? Like they pull. You remember they did the a purge of the sort of alternative app stores, the app recommendation engines.
The other Bitcoin apps have been approved, like this one, and then pulled. Blockchain's wallet, Bitpack, have also been pulled. And it says Apple noted that they had to comply with all legal requirements in any location where they're made available to users. So maybe there is some thought that Bitcoin itself is illegal in some jurisdictions. That blockchain wallet is back in the App Store with limited functionality. You have to have a jailbroken device to do everything. I think it seems completely consistent with Apple's point of view that maybe they don't want to put a bit. That seems a little shady to put a Bitcoin app on the iPhone.
Or it's one of those things where they said that there's always going to be a bunch of stuff that they just don't know about, and they'll figure it out when they get there. Right. They might be in the middle of figuring this out.
Let us take, by the way, a good article. I didn't see this, but somebody added it. I think probably Chad added it to the rundown. The secret little tools, this is from Cult of Mac, that Apple uses to repair the iPhone 5S. This is what Leander was talking about earlier, where Apple develops the toolkit and sends it out to the geniuses. Things like we'd heard about this, the special universal display removal device that is basically four suction cups with a lever.
Take all the magic away, Leo.
But, I mean, look at these. Somebody took some time to build this thing. The battery.
Now we know how to build one ourselves.
The battery removal scissors, which look just like the scissors I used in fourth grade. The special. Yeah, this is funny. So these are these, Leander, these are repair manuals, Apple's own repair manuals.
Yeah, they made their own videos.
iFixit style.
Behind the, to fix the phones. The better one is the roller, the battery roller that puts the battery back in and rolls it down the bottom.
We are told geniuses can replace seven components on the 5S at the store thanks to these tools. The speaker, the receiver, the vibration motor, the EyeSight camera module, the battery, the SIM injector tool. Wait a minute. They can replace the SIM ejector tool. That doesn't count. That comes in the box and the display. Oh, I see. There's a little. they can replace that little doingy thing that pops out the SIM. Okay.
Submarine ashtray breaks.
Here's the iPhone battery roller. Look at this. This is silly. Okay, so it's like how for the audio listeners, how would you describe this, Leander?
Like a pasta machine.
Yeah, pasta machine.
It's like a little guillotine, isn't it? But it's got a roller instead of a blade.
That's exactly what I thought. It looked just like a guillotine.
And you push the phone through and it rolls the battery flat back down using a roller.
Unfortunately.
I took my MacBook down to the Genius store and it had a dodgy trackpad. Yeah. And the guy goes, you know, we talked about it for like 7 minutes. And he says, here, watch this. He says, I'll replace this before your 15 minutes is up. And he ran into the back store, came back out, brand new trackpad right on the button.
So
and if he said it, you know, and if he couldn't have done it in that 15-minute window, he said he was going to have to go, you know, to a repair facility and I'd be without the machine for about a week or something like that. They'd have to ship it back. You know, they got this down to a fine art.
I think it's hysterical that they – and now he doesn't – they don't show you these tools. They're top secret.
Right.
But there's got to be a little table with all these doohickeys on them in the back.
Back of house.
And, of course, they made the lever red so you couldn't miss it. Oh,
there's a small army of guys that just sit in the repair room at the back of the Apple store.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, so if the genius goes back, he doesn't do it. He gives it to somebody who's sitting there.
He's giving it, this is at the Stone Town store, but like in the big flagship one in San Francisco, they give it to somebody who just sits in that room all day fixing stuff.
Wow. I love this stuff. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, your tips, your picks of the week. Andy Yannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, from iMore.com, Renee Ritchie. And, of course, Leander Connie. It's great to have him from The Cult of Mac, the author of a new book about Johnny Ive, which is on Audible and Kindle and, of course, at Amazon as well. The design genius of Johnny Ive. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm. As somebody who just spent an hour and a half in a room full of lawyers, you know, when you do that, it's maybe it's just me, but I can't help but like thinking, I practically see dollar signs whizzing by. Okay, he's $350 an hour. She's $250 an hour. That's $700, $600, and now another $200. So every minute I'm spending $25 a minute. Yeah! You don't want that. LegalZoom.com, they're not a law firm, but they let you do a lot of the legal work that you'd need to do at a much less money. But by doing it yourself, they walk you through it, and you can. And if you, you know, now is a great time to start your own business. Economy's heating up. I know a lot of you have dreams and desires to start your own company. This is how we did it at Twit. We went to LegalZoom.com, spent $99 on the LLC. Basically, they walked me through it. I answered some questions, and I, you know, paid the state filing fees, and boom, I'm an LLC. And we still use those LLC papers today. We trademarked the Twit logo and the Twit name for $169. This is really important. You can also do Chapter S or Chapter C for $99. You might think, oh, I got to have a, you know, a very expensive law firm do this. No. LegalZoom.com. Now, one thing they've added since we used them, you can get help from an attorney at a pre-negotiated flat rate, very affordable. You speak to an attorney licensed in your state. You can choose that attorney based on their profile and unedited reviews from LegalZoom customers, so you really know what you're getting. Great people, really smart, who can really help cut through all of this. LegalZoom.com. Self-help services at your specific direction. They can connect you to an attorney, but they're not a law firm, so you really save money. Get an extra discount when you enter MBW in the referral box at checkout. That way you get $10 off. Just our way of saying thank you for telling them you heard about it on Mac Break Weekly. Now's a great time. Get in. Start your own business. Don't wait on the sidelines when people are taking charge. Now's the best time to get in the game. Launch your business. Don't put it off for incorporation, for trademarks, for patents, and more. LegalZoom.com. Go there right now. Use the offer code MBW. And we thank you, LegalZoom, and we thank you, fine Mac Break Weekly listeners, for supporting us by supporting LegalZoom.com. Time for our picks of the week, Andy Inatko.
Mine is a simple one and kind of a nice little bit of coincidence. I've been firing up my Roku box again because there was a couple of nice new apps got released on Monday for it. And that's when I noticed that PBS has a really cool Roku app. And coincidentally, just today, this morning, PBS announced that they had released that app for Apple TV. And it's almost exactly the way that you would like a network to create a TV app, because you just tell it what your local PBS station is, and you get pretty much every piece of programming that that station has available, both the local programming, the Front Lines, the Austin City Limits, as you can see there, the American Masters, not just what's being shown this week, but also whatever they've got in the library that they still have the rights to stream. So I was able to, I had no idea that this app existed. And it was like, I instantly got myself into trouble because I was mentally saying, oh, that was a really good, great performances. I really want to see that. Oh, that was a really great American Masters. I want to see that. Oh, there's another two great American Masters. I want to see those. So this is another reason to add value to your Apple TV. And if you are in any way a PBS fan, it's another reason. It's another thing that sort of checks off your checklist of, oh, so I guess I don't need to have cable TV. Or at the very least, I don't need to put cable TV in more than just the living room of my house. It's a really well-done app, chock full of content, easy to use, and just I love it.
I'm installing it tonight as a PBS fan. Mr. Rene Ritchie, what do you have for us?
So I am a fan of the aluminum bumpers for the iPhone. There's several companies that make them, and one of them is Draco Design. And this is their new Ducati series, which takes inspiration from the famous motorcycle. And what this does is, I have a gold iPhone, so I got the gold version here. And what this does is it goes around your iPhone like an Apple bumper used to, and it's milled aluminum, so it's very high quality, and it's got a gold finish to match, but it comes in a variety of colors. It also comes with a lanyard and a stylus, so you have the complete Ducati matching pack. I just like the way that these sort of
it's some expensive. Companies, holy moly.
Yeah, The aluminum mill stuff is always expensive, but it's usually from companies that draw inspiration from, you know, Special Forces apparel or hypercars or, you know,
as used by SEAL Team 6.
No, absolutely. And, you know, they make a really, really high quality product. And the thing with iPhones is they're beautiful, but they're all the same. And you might not want to put a rubber case or something on it that takes away from the appearance of the iPhone, but you do want something that protects it a little bit.
Yeah.
And the aluminum bumpers, whether it's Draco's or somebody else's, is a really nice way to provide a little bit of extra protection, but to change the overall footprint of the phone so it looks a little more distinctive. And Draco in particular, they're a Hong Kong company. They draw on a lot of Asian influences for their design. So there's a lot of curves and there's a lot of very interesting shapes. And if you are in the lookout for a premium, you know, bumper or a premium sort of a case, they're definitely a nice company to look at, and now, they have a great amount of finishes.
How hard is it to get on? Because I bought an aluminum bumper for my HTC One, because I like the iPhone. It was a beautiful phone. I didn't want to hide the design with a case. But it required two tiny screws. Taking the case off and on was non-trivial.
Yes, these require two tiny screws. Yeah. Taking it on and off is non-trivial. Yeah. And it's not something that, like, if you like to take off your case all the time and you want to change things up a lot, it's probably not for you. But if you're someone who just wants to put something on, you like the look and you're going to keep it on, then it's a little bit of work to get the screws in or out. And, you know, some companies do lever systems where you only have one screw or not. It's still a fiddly little screw. So it's something that if you're going to put it on, you're going to want to leave it on there for a while.
I guess that's part of the appeal, is it really becomes integral to the phone.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's not, you know, the reason I, on the one, you had a dock for the one that I would use in the car. And so I wanted to take the case off, and you're certainly not going to do that while you're driving.
Yeah, this is not for someone who puts a case on and takes it off. And also, if you use really thick media cables or you have some sort of special accessory requirement, you're going to want to check that before you put on one of these cases.
But I do agree they are beautiful. I mean, it really enhances the phone without hiding its own beautiful design.
People still know you have an iPhone, but they're going to say, oh, my goodness, why does your iPhone look like that?
It has wings. Your iPhone can fly. Leander, I don't know if we told you, but if you have anything you like these days, it could be hardware, could be software, something that's turning you on, please share it with us. Anything? What are you doing these days besides writing books?
Well, I treated myself, having finished the thing, to some Play One speakers from Sonos.
Aren't they great?
Oh my God, I just love them. It's like my favorite products ever, even more than my iPad.
Sonos is so expensive that when they offer a $199 speaker, you sit up and take notice, and they do sound really good.
They sound great. They're so easy to set up. I love to be able to like stream music from all over the world. I like to listen to the radio from London. Turn my kids onto it. You know, I have to give them a proper musical education. So to me, it's very.
What do you listen to radio for? What do you listen to?
No, Radio One Extra, like a lot of the music. I miss music. I miss British music culture.
Yeah.
It's a way for me to keep in touch with it.
People don't know this, but music was invented in Britain.
Yeah, I know. Not a lot of people know that.
No, not people know that.
Well, that's the thing I miss the most. You know, there's a lot of things I don't miss about Britain, but the music and being in a music mad place is definitely one of them. And so this is, you know, for me, it's like, it's very important to be in touch with my roots, my musical.
I love Sonos. You know, you can use, I didn't know this, but I'm tempted now. If you have a play bar as your sound for your TV, a Sonos play bar, you can use these two ones as surround sound speakers. And it's just very easy to pair them up and just it just works.
I know. That's what impressed me, because it was so easy. You just plug them in and then it detects them. And then it's two or three button presses to set it up. And it works flawlessly. I mean, there's not many products you get that are that easy to use and are that smart and have been that well thought out.
I'm with you on that. And people look at it and they go, oh, it's way too expensive. It's very expensive.
I know, but I buy a component like a year.
That's what I do. I just slowly add. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, it's over the, you know, it's cost hundreds of dollars over the years.
Right.
But the earliest units work just as well, and it is, you know, and it's really added value. Every time you add a component, it adds more and more value to the whole thing.
I have Sonos throughout my house now.
Right, me too.
It's
me
amazing.
Too.
I just love
it. We use it for Talk Mobile. We use Sonos with Songza, thanks to Kevin Mitchell.
Love Songza. Isn't Songza great? Yeah,
they work fantastically well together. Yeah. Every day was a party.
Yeah. So there you go. Now, this is the one thing missing from the Sonos. It drives me nuts. They have Spotify. They have Moog. They have RDO. but I wish they'd get Google. They have Amazon Music, although it's never worked right for me, but they do not have Google Play Music.
iOS just got it yesterday, Leo. We have to.
That's my pick of the week. Funny that you should mention that. So the iPhone version is out, although I can use it on my iPad just fine. Google Play Music, to me, you know, there's a lot of opinion about what the best music service is. But Google Play Music has a lot of the things I'm looking for. For one thing, I can run the little Google app on my Mac, and it will upload all my songs or check and see if the songs are there and add them to my library. So I have, I think it's free for up to 25,000 songs. I'm right at the limit. And that's awesome. That means my entire library is available streaming on the web, on Android, and now on iOS, which I think is fabulous. They added radio, too. And now, you know, everybody's got different taste about what the... I think it's better than Pandora. I don't know if it's better than iTunes Radio or Spotify or Moog or RDO. I happen to like it a lot. So you can pick a genre. You can pick an artist. You have recommended stations. They will also take a look at what's in your collection and modify the radio to include more of your collection in it. That's very nice. It is iPhone, so of course on an iPad, it's, you know, not exactly the best use of real estate. But I think iPhone apps now on the iPad are a lot better than they used to be on iOS 7. So on the iPad, I'm showing that iPad now. If you, yeah, there you go. This is, it kind of looks a little bit, but you've got the Listen Now, which gives you everything in your collection. You've got your actual collection by genre, artist, album, songs. It will pick up your iTunes playlists, so that's kind of nice. These are all playlists that are in my iTunes, but the Google Music widget that you install on your Mac does put all of your playlists into here, which is good. You've got the radio, and of course on the iPad, that means you've got now one of the things that really beats Pandora, skip as many times as you want. There's no limit on skips. There's no limit on the number of stations you can have. Radio means you pick an artist or you pick a genre, and they kind of put a playlist together for you and start playing it. But you, because you have unlimited skips, you can really tune it. And of course, like iTunes, you can buy music from the Google Play Store. Pretty much, you know, I don't know if it's, they're all 9 million songs, something like that. They're all pretty similar, and I think all the new albums come out on everything, as far as I can tell. And you know, you see Google's recommendations are pretty good. Lou Reed just passed away, so of course they've got a Lou Reed album on here. I'm a fan, and I'm glad that it came out on iOS. I wish Sonos would support it. I'm sure they will. You're right. It's just a matter of time, I guess. But
I'm a fan of Google Music too. I think it's the music service that I really, really wanted. One that combines a subscription service with suggestions with my actual library all in one app.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Sort of annoys. It just sort of annoys me that everything else is you have to switch between three different apps and you can't really mix these three things together. And so I've had the unlimited pass for since they first offered it.
Yeah.
Is it
$8 a month? $9 a month? $10?
I think it's up to it for new subscribers. I think it's $10 a month if you jumped in the first 30 days. It was like $8 for
life. We got it for $8. Yeah.
But I mean, so many times I have a playlist that has like sort of different parentage tracks. And after something really is just a must-play item for about a month and a half, then I'll go and I'll actually buy it and have it and keep it and love it and call it George. But it's good to have that sort of, then not have to say, well, here's a playlist of stuff that I don't own. Here's a playlist of stuff that I actually own. It works great.
It's cross-platform now, which is really good. Of course, because it's on the iOS, you can't buy music from within the app. You have to go to the web to do that because Apple does, you know, takes 30% and Google doesn't want to do that. By the way, I got to say, the speakers on the new iPads, both the Air and the Retina, now are dual speakers, and the quality, I think, is much better than it used to be. That's something that I think been underreported. I really think that.
What I like about it, too, is that if you hold it on one side, you're no longer blocking the speaker.
It's on the bottom now.
You can only block one speaker at a time.
This was invented in England, this music. Like all
John Barry,
like all great music, exactly.
There you go.
That, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this ever loving edition of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you so much, Leander Connie, for joining us. Really
Thank
great
you,
to
Leo.
Have you.
You.
Everybody should go to Johnny Ive the Book, or I'm sorry, Johnny Ive Book, JonyIveBook.com, and check out the new book from Leander. The genius behind Apple's greatest products, Johnny Ive. I think this is overdue. It's time to honor this guy for what an amazing body of work. And I'm talking about you, Leander, not this Johnny. Who the hell's this Johnny guy? I don't know.
It's a guy, Leander.
Pelta Mac.
I think Johnny Ive has done good work, listeners.
Oh, all right. All right.
Please continue to give me access to events and loan hardware.
Anyway, thanks for being here, Leander. Thank you also from iMore.com. Renee Ritchie, great to see you. What's the latest from iMore? What you up to these days?
We ended up taking John Siracusa and putting him on a podcast with Ryan Nielsen, who used to work on OS X, and Daniel Jalkut, and it went 4 hours. So we're going to break it up into two parts and put it up starting on Thursday.
That is
awesome.
If you're
all interested in why OS X made that, when you see Siracusa start asking about HFS Plus and Nielsen start explaining, you know, the realities of working at Apple, it's pure gold.
And Jalkut, of course, one of the best Apple developers, Red Sweater Software. So you've kind of got the best three people on. Nobody
and
does
Guy
a
English
better.
Is hosting it.
Yeah. Oh man, is that if I go to imore.com/podcasts
/debug, it'll be up tomorrow.
It's part of the debug podcast. Oh, yeah. I can't wait to hear that.
And this with the current episode is with Jonathan Deutsch, who was doing QA, and he did a lot of the accessibility features at Apple. A lot of the stuff that ended up being an Automator, not exactly, but sort of the inspiration for Automator, and that's up there now.
Neat stuff.
Yeah. Smart guys.
imore.com/podcasts. Thank you also to Andy Yannacco, who is always here, always on time. He replaced in the middle of the show his backdrop, which was last week's cows with space shuttle, with what looks like a starfield. Are you entering hyperspace here?
No, that is the BAFTA heat shield from a Gemini space capsule in the California Museum of Science or whatever in LA that I was at, where I saw the shuttle a couple weeks ago.
I would spend money. I wish I could buy gold tin foil. Gold foil, there's something so beautiful about it.
Yeah,
you just can't get it in stores.
It's like a sweater. It's this was like drop something from Earth orbit and just let it just be coated with plasma of compressed air trying to get out of the way. Like, oh boy,
screaming.
and two astronauts lived on the other side. We're only about a couple of feet away from that, and they were just fine.
Andy Yannacco, Chicago Sun-Times, the celestial waste of bandwidth. Always a pleasure. Thanks for being here, Andy. Thanks to everybody for joining us. We do the show at 11 a.m. when Leo isn't stuck with lawyers for an hour. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv every Tuesday. Please stop by and join us. If you can't make, and by the way, a new time, we're not changing times in January on this. This show is not moving. But my schedule is changing a little bit. And you can see more about that at our blog, inside.twit.tv. A new schedule starting January, the week of January 6th, so that I can get Thursday and Friday off. But I think Mac Break Weekly is one of the few shows that's staying right where it is, so that's good news. If you want to join us in studio live, love that. Just email tickets at twit.tv. Let us know what date you'll be here so we can put a chair out for you. If you're here on a Mac Break Weekly day, the chances of you getting a comfortable chair are better. If you're here on Twit, then you're going to have to sit in those bone-crunching folding chairs that we've got. Sorry about that. And, of course, you can always get on-demand audio and video, which allows you to choose what you're sitting on while you're listening to the show at twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer podcasts are sold or given away, for that matter. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Now get back to work because break time is over.